Welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us again on a Coffee and Uchi Okeke conversation. I'm so excited to have with us on the stage today Salma Uchi Okeke, daughter of the great late Christopher Uchi Okeke and the director of the Uchi Okeke Legacy. Thank you, Salma, for joining us. And Richard Kilpit. Richard is the art specialist and art guide for Art Route South Africa. He guides mostly international visitors on museum tours of South Africa. And his museum background included running the Center for Art Education at the Zaitz Mocha Museum. And he's also a longtime friend from art school days that I've known for a very long time. So Richard, it's wonderful to have you with us as well. And thank you for joining us.
Good day.
And thank you everyone in the audience and those that will be tuning in to this episode later on. So we're a couple of days ahead of a wonderful art weekend that I've privileged to be, have been invited to talk at. And I'm giving two talks. One of them is about the living legacy of Uchi Okeke, and it's called Bridging Past and Present in Artistic Expression. So I thought, as a kind of kickoff, because that's just a couple of days away, I might share with you, Richard and Salma, a little bit of what I've planned to talk about to that audience at the Solo Studios Art Weekend event as a kickoff, and then we'll just see where the conversation goes from there. So it's a wonderful opportunity for me to address this live audience about Uchi Okeke. Because it's situated in South Africa, I think there's a gap in South Africa's education, which we'll get to the reasons for, around this artist who's such an important figure in African modernism and African art, but not that well known in South Africa. So that's the reason for doing the introduction talk. And in terms of sort of introducing Uchi Okeke, I had to think a lot about him as the man, the work, and the legacy, and what Salma is doing, taking that legacy forward. So I reflected on this being a bit of a journey through time, kind of immersing ourselves in the world of Uchi Okeke, who was such a trailblazer and who really transformed art into a vessel of cultural heritage and innovation. And so I'm going to start that talk with a sort of understanding the roots of Okeke's journey, taking them back to when he was born in Nigeria in 1933, and his early life, which was so enriched by African traditions, from his childhood, how immersed he was in the essence of his culture, and how that formed such a foundation of his lifelong commitment to reinventing that artistic heritage, really. And then from there, he became such a significant figure in art history. And he wasn't just an artist. He was a visionary vanguard, if you like, a kind of cultural magician, and played such a pivotal role in the Nigerian art scene, advocating for that fusion that he came to through his work of tradition and innovation that ultimately earned him that title of Father of African Modernism. And then one story that kind of encapsulates that that visionary spirit that I love was around his work putting together the manifesto within his Zaria Art Society. That manifesto that stated, young artists in a new nation, that's what we are. We must grow with the new Nigeria and work to satisfy a traditional love for art or perish with our colonial past. And that was published in that Zaria Society manifesto, and it became this natural synthesis movement. And he gathered, I was going to say a following, and but I've been advised that it was more of a fellowship than a following, because he was such a well-loved character. So I think it's so important for South Africans to get to know him. And he also resonates so well with us. And I was reflecting on the speaker we had last week, the art critic and journalist Lucinda Jolly, who wrote an article that was published in the Daily Maverick about Uchiokeke, and how that's how his sort of influence is also shared with South Africans through both kind of solidarity that Nigeria stood with us against apartheid, through connections, unusual connections like Uchiokeke being the artist who designed our late Archbishop Tutu's throne and portals in the cathedral in Nigeria. And of course, those of us who read Chinua Achebe's novel Things Fall Apart at School or at university would have seen the accompanying illustrations by Okeke, because he was so, his network, his group weren't just artists, they were writers, they were thinkers and philosophers and politicians. And I want to chat a bit more with you about that aspect of him, Salma. It must have been so fascinating growing up with him. And then we look at the work of Uchiokeke, his artistic contributions, that sort of symphony of innovation and emotion and that blend of African aesthetics and modern sensibilities that he just accomplished and produced out of that, these vibrant paintings, sculptures that exude such a kind of evocative power. And I guess his mom, which we'll also chat to you about, Selma, his mom was his original teacher, but he then became a teacher himself and has always, I think, through his life. And that's something that you're continuing, Selma, that sharing of knowledge, that openness to collaboration, which I think is pivotal to why he set up the Asela Institute and why you are so motivated, and Idioma was so motivated to continue his legacy, because he has the enduring relevance, and because his impact didn't end when he passed away, but it continues. And so you have this big task of preserving what he started and building on it and continuing it. And the Uchiokeke legacy is is the vehicle that you've chosen and the means you've chosen to do it and dedicating to preserving his work, his collections, his archives, and making them accessible for generations to come. I think that role of his and the Uchiokeke legacies as an educator, as someone who enhances people's lives and enables them to transform and to grow is the power of education. I'd like to start there with you, Richard. And you have spent much of your life in the arts as an educator. And I'd like just to ask your thoughts or comments on Uchiokeke, first of all, and then on arts educational outreach, I guess, which is a big part of the program that Selma's trying to set up.
Yeah, thanks for that, Tamsin. A fantastic model for what I would have hoped to have already happened in South Africa in the visual arts and education space, in that sort of questioning the Western canon of that is so much a sort of cemented into a lot of the colonial historical organizations and institutions of teaching. And so, although informally, certainly there has been, there have been pioneers in South African history, even back to the 1960s with Polly Street, with Walter Battis and all the artists who came from Polly Street and Rorksdrift, there wasn't really a sort of formalized curriculum apart from fight the government and fight the apartheid state and to conscientize people. So that was our curriculum in a way right until 1990. And so I think having grown up, I'm a product of the Western canon. I happened to go to Rhodes University at the same time as you, and they were really probably one of the last departments to change. I know it's one of the leading voices in African cultural research now, with Ruth Simbao leading their program, and a lot of African scholars coming through their department, and people like Barnabas Teacher Mavuti, and a good space. But when I was there, I was fortunate because I hadn't done art at school. They literally went through the whole Western canon from first year to third year. So we started with Egyptian and ended up at Impressionism by the end of third year. And it was literally a Margaret Gardner history of art. I would say lucky for me because I hadn't done that. But again, I was able to view it with a skeptical eye, whereas everyone else hated it because they had been imprinted it at school. And certainly art wasn't necessarily a subject of choice. And certainly being an art lecturer at places like Wits University, it's shifted a lot now, but it was still primarily, even into the 2000s, white students who were coming to the university to do art because it wasn't necessarily a great career option in the new South Africa. And certainly in terms of teaching art, art teachers were one of the lower levels at school level, unless you were lucky enough to have an art center nearby. It was a subject that at school people took as a secondary or as another option because you couldn't do something high level like science. And there was only one subject lower than that, and it was design, and that's for people who couldn't draw. And so at school level in South Africa, and we still have this very, very sort of neglected space of education. And having been since 1992 in educational and community-based development teacher training, it's actually seems to have gotten worse rather than better because of the amount of people and the poor resources at schools. And so before we even address the sort of legacy of Uchi Okeke and the African, the school from Africa that I have been privileged to wake up to at the Zeitzmacher, to all the big names of artists that I've never encountered, to finally be part of the vision of Koyo Koyo, the director at Zeitzmacher, to address this sort of huge imbalance of the sort of recording and dissemination and of the voice from Africa, of the styles, of the personalities of the schools that have been so much part of her background, with the raw art institution in Senegal. She really has this vision of addressing this gap in the knowledge, not just in South Africa, but obviously globally. But as part of the education department and the Center for Art Education at the museum, with its mobile museum program, certainly the addressing, creating resources and educational resources for artists that are not necessarily being considered or even translated to a school level or university course level, at a sort of bridging or foundational levels, I'm not talking postgraduate here, but certainly the view that I have is one of immense possibility in the space for such a rich legacy and body of work and model of teaching and dissemination and incorporation and that whole fusion of like that with natural synthesis, the taking the traditional and working out of it. I feel that with the advent of the digital and having worked with students, and even yesterday I was doing a workshop with emerging artists, there's almost a leapfrogging effect. There was a big discussion about self-taught artists yesterday in our workshop and how that's not necessarily an appropriate term anymore, because so many of the big names on the global stage are people who have not gone through the traditional ivory tower school, get a qualification stuff. So really it's such a perfect opportunity for this sort of legacy and for this to come into public eye and to be written about in the newspapers and to trickle down to into the curriculum at schools, because I think it's unlike sort of boring art history or old dead stuff that's imprinted in us at school and in old tired curriculums. This is vital stuff, and it talks to us culturally, catalyzing new and instigating new voices rather than just saying, oh, copy the old stuff. And so I think the philosophy and artistic journey of Uchiakeke is a great model for any educational program. And just from the sheer joy and inspiration of the work and the graphic imagery and the colors and the style of the paintings, right through to his fellowship model of teaching, it's something that I think has a real grounding for us to and as educators and for people to start to take a hold of to work with in all tiers of education.
He was such a multi-dimensional human being, not just artist, thinker, writer, poet, educator. But he also must have been a great diplomat to have. He was dealing with that Western kind of education canon. He was dealing with a very a moment in history of big change from colonialism. And Salma, can you shed some light as his daughter as to how you think he achieved so much and managed to take so many people with him on his journey?
Thank you so much, Tamsin. If you don't mind, because I was listening to Richard, and it was, you know, so exciting hearing all the things he had to say. I mean, it's really so opportune that we're able to get somebody that has enough experience from the South African educational sector, the art sector. It's also quite cheering to see how this legacy would resonate on that side. I just want to comment first before I answer your question that in those days when there was this general renaissance on the African scene, unfortunately, South Africa was not able to partake because of the apartheid. A number of countries were coming out of the colonization. Some had to fight for it, and some were given on a platter like Nigeria. But South Africa, unfortunately, was not able to be part of that movement at that time. Because, you know, one important thing to note is that at that time, there was so much happening, you know, all over the African continent. There were writers, there were artists, there were, you know, in the creative circle, there was that growth, that recognition, and that general interest to interrogate their heritage and their environment, you know, and but still with the positivity of, you know, picking up new skills, learning new ways of doing things better, you know. That happened at that time, but unfortunately South Africa was not able to be part of that general movement at the time. And, you know, and in Nigeria, I know that there was concerted effort, which my father was very much in the center of, you know, to build up a curriculum, because like Richard said, the art was not where anybody would be thinking of going. It was not a proper career path. It was not a proper profession at that time. And so they needed to make it that those coming after them would legitimately be able to build a career in that sector, you know. And it's interesting to find out that where they would have been then is practically where South Africa is today. Because even though the educational system has run down generally in Nigeria, I know for sure, you know, with the mismanagement of the political environment, the economic environment, you know, and so many things that haven't been done right. But the fact that there was an effort to put some measures in place has still helped to sanitize the sector, you know. So for art, for education in art, there was real effort to start putting structures in place, start putting together a kind of curriculum. And this was especially at the tertiary level, but also at the secondary level, because I know that my father was involved with even like setting questions for the exams you take to get into college from secondary school. And I know that this also was not restricted to Nigeria, because he was doing invigilating in other African countries like Ghana, Togo, you know, around, especially in West Africa. So the movement was taken out. It wasn't just within Nigeria. And there was effort to streamline the education in that sector, you know, to make it more beneficial and to make the sector, like Richard had said, not a secondary choice for students. Yeah. So thank you very much, Richard, for highlighting this. It's quite interesting when we are having these conversations, the kinds of information that come out, you know, we can see the relevance of some of these things, because sometimes when things happen, it happens because at that period, there's a need, you know, because I try to imagine if they had come out at a different time, how would they be exactly? You know, there were so many things at that time. There was emancipation, and it wasn't just on the African continent, you know, there was in the United States, slavery had, you know, people were beginning to have a sense of themselves and also interrogate their backgrounds, their origins. You know, it was already happening over there also. You know, blacks around the world, you know, were beginning to, you know, find themselves and go back to what they had, and at the same time use the new practices. So thank you very much, Richard. Now going to your question. Yes. Now going to your question, Tamsin, how did he manage to pull all those people along? I would say that a lot of it had to do with his personality. I think so. A great deal had to do with that. One was his level of intelligence. The whole thing was an experiment for him, really, you know? And the experiment was hinged on collaboration. It wasn't something he was going to just do all by himself. So he needed the input of others. And he had the intrinsic character to attract people to come on board. And he was able to give them the opportunity to make it their own, So everybody came on, but they now use their initiative, basically. You know, all that was holding them together, basically, was the foundational vision. And each person could run with it. You know, it was such a simple vision that everybody could relate with and everybody could make their own. So, you know, you get involved and you practically forget that the origins of the vision, actually, because, you know, it resonates so well with you that you just make it your own and you go with it. And there was that freedom, you know, for people to go ahead and use their initiative and run with the vision as far as they could go. And that is why the legacy is still a living one up till today. You know, even myself and Ijoma that got on board, it became our own because there are things we're doing that maybe he won't do it exactly that way. But, you know, we have the freedom of expression within this vision to you know, take the basic principles of the vision and run with it and just see how far we can go. I think that was the one thing specifically that has helped to make this a living legacy, and I think it basically had to do with his intrinsic character. He had that ability to listen to other people. He had that ability to allow other people to express themselves. He had that ability to mentor, but, you know, from a back end. So he was never like in front. He just helped them along, prompted them, showed them new techniques that he had learned. Sharing was very important. Sharing information was very key, and he was very good at that.
Such a different approach, Richard. You made me laugh earlier thinking about back to the days of Rhodes, which were the same things that I experienced. And I also didn't have a high school in art history. But the whole approach then was learning, kind of being educated by learning information about something else until you know it and can regurgitate it. And what Selma's describing is something completely different to that. It's inspired and so simple, but it's not about something else anymore, because somehow it becomes about you and you take it on. And that is so different. That's probably why it has remained so dynamic and relevant, and why it will continue to inspire for generations, I'm sure.
Completely. Yeah, I think that whole energy of the change, the Renaissance. I mean, we had our moment of African Renaissance in probably what with Thabo Mbeki in the early 2000s, but certainly, I think the energy around that time in the countries experiencing that awakening and the revisiting of the pride and the wealth of the past and the knowledge of the history of the continent really must have been quite an extraordinary thing. And I think, in a way, in our very complex, urban, connected digital lives, it's much harder and in a way easier. I mean, I know some people who are forming collectives, but I don't see the collectives happening in the same way, the sort of bodies of knowledge with a leader in the front. I mean, certainly in South Africa, visual arts is right down on the bottom of priority lists, certainly with the government. But there are people like Lena and Klope with sort of the human stories and the archiving of people's stories and traditional stories. There are institutes like at the UNISA, the African Renaissance Institute, which brings scholars from around the continent all together annually to deal with issues around arts and culture. And certainly, I think Uchi Okeke must be a major part of their curriculum. And since we were speaking about it, I would love to follow up and make connections for you with that department. But it's really this moment in history where there's this. I was listening on the radio to an interview with Lionel Davis, who was a prisoner on Robben Island, and after liberation, he's become known as an artist and a poet, and he really spoke on the radio like a Renaissance man, a living person. And when we've had him in the Center for Art Education in residence, just the knowledge that he shares with the students and the stories, he's such a living resource, a living library of a connection both to a bad past but also a very exciting future. His paintings are certainly not what one would call dour or protest anymore. They're celebrations of a past and celebrations of creativity as a way beyond any sort of cultural imperialism and oppression, and certainly an example that for me gives me a sense maybe of how Uchiha Keke would have been, because there's this sort of group around him. In fact, in the 80s, he had a group of artists, and it was mostly people of color that were at and can associated with the University of Cape Town Art School, but set up a separate part that sort of a separate organization. I'm just struggling with the name. It's the group that they had, and I'll find the name for you now. But it's fewer and fewer people. I think people are more drawn to musical art, musicians and stuff that in South Africa. And I think in terms of a sort of leader that could go beyond. I mean, South Africa is really struggling with its insulation against Southern African countries, sort of like this tussle that it has. I mean, we have such a vibrant mix in Johannesburg and Cape Town with Zimbabwean, Malawian artists and visual artists, and some of our big names that are practicing in South Africa come from the other countries. And it's liminal. It's a potential, and it really could happen. And I think the more we hear of examples like the work that Uchiha Keke did, that the more we'll be prompted to follow these models of education.
And Uchiha Keke's model had a lot to do with cultural exchanges, you know. Because I remember when I was growing up with him in the University of Nigeria in Nsukka, where he actually had enough time to exploit his experiment very well in that kind of environment. There was a lot of exchange of students, you know. More like students coming from other parts of the world. I mean, it was very important. I mean, even if the students from Nigeria could not go as much as the students coming from outside, they still got the advantage of, you know, mixing with people from other cultural identities. And for Uchiha Keke, it wasn't about black and white. No, not at all. It was every culture was legitimate, basically, you know. And you would need to understand yours to be able to stand at par with others. But then you could learn a whole lot from other people's cultures as well. So, for instance, when I had to go to secondary school, he made me go from the eastern part of Nigeria to the northern part of Nigeria to go to school, because he said, I need to learn more about other people. And this is just within Nigeria. You know? And of course, he went for the sabbatical leave and took his whole family with him to the USA, Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And, you know, put us all in school. He was very, very, very interested in cultural exchanges, in expanding your borders, your experience, through meeting people from other parts of the world, other parts of your country, you know, and I think that has really made a difference with us, because it has expanded our sense of how big this world is and how much there's inside it, you know. And it doesn't mean that every single thing is will resonate with you, but then every single thing is legitimate as well. That was his approach. And you know, if he was here now, we would still be talking about, finding out what's happening in South Africa, for instance, you know, learning from them and them learning from us, because, you know, every day you learn. And, you know, even if you feel you were stuck in colonization or apartheid, but there's a learning experience inside all that. And it changes you. It makes you a different person, and it's not necessarily negative, you know. So yeah. from Uchakeke's point of view, it would always be to find the good things inside every experience that you can now turn around to improve things, you know, for humanity in the long run. Improve understanding. Improve tolerance. You know, improve accommodation of diverse views, you know. And you know, that is something that is quite academic as well.
It explains a bit of his innovation, the fact that the way that he was so innovative, because that openness, that kind of bridge building that he did so deliberately, but also it surprises you as the person doing it and as the person who's been invited in to be part of it. It ignites your imagination, that kind of bringing in of or allowing that integration of foreign influences into your local traditions and your own points of view out to other people. It's something I think everybody should do. And your dad was also a well-traveled man. That I suppose was a deliberate part of that. But, I wish for young people that they could all have as much of that experience as possible. And part of that is, I suppose, our responsibility as legacy, as it's kind of nurturers of a legacy, but also as educators, to help to stimulate kind of openness.
Like Richard said, you know, in a sense, it's a bit easier because now we have the global village, you know, in a sense. But, you know, in another sense, there's so much prejudice still. I mean, as wide as the world is, as accessible as it's as information is, you know, the people are still very narrow-minded, you know. So today, you may not need to make a physical trip, although there's a lot to be learned from a physical trip still. If it is possible, you know, you can't really exchange that for just sitting and doing everything on your laptop. But the opportunity of the web is also something they didn't have. They would have to go physically, you know, to those places. And these are the changes that keep happening, you know, that the legacy continually adjusts to, because change is what is constant in life.
Indeed, and that Richard, just thinking about what you're doing now as the art specialist and guide for Art Route, it must be a wonderful part of that experience to be that eye opener, if you like, or to be the guide to the eye opening influences and exposure for those visitors, foreign visitors to South Africa.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's a real gift to be able to take someone who hasn't been to South Africa or even Africa before, and to so orientate them just through a short or an hour or 2 hour tour of a certain collection, or like our National Gallery, or go to specific solo shows, or do a full day tour where we go to the three major museums It's enlightening, and very often I find there's a lot that comes back. It's not me talking in one direction. There's a lot from the guests sharing their experience and how there are similarities and links and artists that they've seen. And so, yeah, it's a privilege, and certainly some of the guests do come from Africa, and then we can really get talking. It's not just a sort of a skip through the recent history. It's more of a deep dive into what are we talking about? Why do artists, contemporary artists, work in the way they do? Where are their styles from? How do they engage an audience, especially in this digital world? The joy of a physical interaction with an artwork is always something so much more powerful than just looking at a picture on a screen, and spending what we call now slow looks, where you actually spend even 10 minutes with one painting instead of just strolling through the gallery casually and spending less than a second or two with every picture. You've deep dive into certain experiences. And then on my other side is I still work with the development sector. And like I said, I'm doing, the City of Cape Town has a fantastic emerging artists program, which is exactly where it's an informal setting. There's more mentorship and it's where discussions around things like your personal voice and legacy, and why do you say the things you do, and what do you want to do with your art? Where are you going? So that gets into the real education and nuts and bolts. And it's our young artists. When I say young, some of them are 50 years old, but they've recently started making portfolios or working on imagery. But a majority of them are between 25 and 30 years old, but they have been working or are working in a related industry, but have a creative production of their own. And so it's a wonderful format, and I've been involved with it since 2019. Where the City of Cape Town provides a platform of mentors to take you through from the business of art through to actually curating shows on what we call First Thursday in Cape Town, which is the gallery evenings. But sure, I really see those moments as small examples of that continued tracing of the voices from the past right through to how relevant they are to today, and how I curate my own tours is very often to keep me like in my authentic space, to actually speak from the influences and from my past, but also to give the voice to the artist, do studio visits and to let the artist themselves speak to the guest or to the new emerging artist.
That's really interesting. I hope the next time I come, I mean, I would try to do one of your tours, because I have only been to South Africa once. So the next time I come will be my second time. And the first time I wasn't able to, really move around so much. But this time I sure hope to soak in some of the, cultural places of interest and, learn more directly than just reading up or going on the internet,
Absolutely. No, we're going to curate a fantastic experience for you. You get to meet some of those voices.
Definitely. I would also love to, Richard. We're having my Artfundy is a remote, completely 100% remote company, but we are going to have our first kind of get together of everyone later in the year. And I would love to
treat them. Yes.
Everyone,
yes, we're definitely going to do it.
A very enriching experience.
Well, I'm just speaking to you now and think about this. I would love to find a way to actually sort of, just thinking of that notion of a curriculum. It's this idea that it's, if I'm not around, then that knowledge doesn't exist. And I was thinking of it with my father, who's a doctor who's just retired, and how much knowledge he has. And now I'm trying to encourage him not to just sit and play bowls or whatever. It's actually to capture some of his knowledge and to put it in a format, but in some way, maybe with Artfundy, to capture some of these tours and these and to create a sort of to translate my way of looking at the past and the present through artworks as a sort of format, and to formalize it in some way. I mean, I'm very much someone who responds quite immediately and off the cuff, but I would like to sort of get it into a sort of format where it could actually be, when my little girl who's 8, you know, she's, when she's 20 and she might be studying, you know, for her to see some sort of example of how I worked and how I thought.
I love that idea.
So important. And that is so, so, I don't know how to put it, so real time, because what it does is it makes each person think, you know, and that is how people get to own the process of their own education and how they disseminate knowledge. You know, when you become a part of it, unlike what Tamsin said, the traditional model where you have a teacher in front of the classroom, doling out information to you, and you are just busy trying to, you know, internalize and be able to, you know, repeat basically, you know. But there's a difference when you are actively involved in your training. You know, and you're able to think, you know, your thoughts take you in various directions from the original thoughts of whoever it is, you know, because definitely it's not going to resonate the same way with every single person. Even if you're siblings in a family, you won't have exactly the same characters, you know. So this is a very exciting model for education, I think. And that is why we're working with Artfundi, because, you know, they understand the fluidity of this kind of legacy. Mm. They really do.
Mm. Yeah.
Building Uchukeke's legacy is such a privilege for us to be involved in with you, Selma. And it's very exciting, but empowering and inspiring as well.
Mm. I really look forward to see as we move along, you know, as we get more people on board, how it impacts them and in what directions they go with it. You know, that is the real joy of it all, you know, because you sit back and see people moving on. And they're taking it in directions you never would have thought of completely, you know. So it's every day is an exciting new day, basically.
Mm. That's a beautiful place to end and on this exciting new day. So thank you so much for joining us, Richard, and sharing your insights and your thought-provoking approach to what you do, to education, to supporting artistic legacies. And thank you, Selma, for sharing those lovely stories that give us more of a closeness to the wonderful father and this great role model in our cultural, African cultural scene and history. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Richard. It's been a real pleasure conversing with you.
Thank you, both of you. And I look forward to the continued engagement on the online and in person.
Yeah. Definitely.
Fantastic.